Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and my guest is Miami FC's Richie Ryan. Richie, great to have you on the show, mate. How's it going?
Very well, Stel. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. We've been trying to arrange something, and lo and behold, here we are.
it took a little bit longer than expected.
Hey, it's going to be well worth it. I know it. I know for it.
I hope so. Going on board it for you to sleep while
I'm
talking to you.
No, not at all, mate. Not at all. Well, mate, I'll tell you what. Before we talk about Miami FC, well, let's go right the way back to your youth career in Belvedere FC. And I know this is a club that's very well known for producing footballers who've represented Republic of Ireland, such as Wes Houlihan, Mark Kennedy, Stephen Kennedy, even a good friend of ours, Killian Sheridan. Now, I hear that winning actually wasn't the most important thing at Belvo. What can you tell us about the coaching methods there?
I think everybody, from my time at the club, everybody was on the same page. From I went there when I was under 12s, I think everybody was on the same page all the way up to the older age groups, that if they just wanted their players to learn a certain style of football and to enjoy their football and produce, like they have done, produce players into a professional environment. And that's why you see so many players that have come through the system at Belvedere Football Club.
So what would you say you learned most, though, being there?
Probably the love for the game. I think growing up as a kid, it's probably the happiest time of your life playing football, because you don't have the pressure of the full-time environment and stuff like that. So the coaches used to make sure that every player was enjoying their football every week. And I suppose the pressure does start a little bit when you're at a club like Belvedere Football Club, because you have success at underage and you come up against the likes of Cherry Orchard and Home Farm and Stella Morris and stuff, that are more big clubs in schoolboy football in Ireland. So it was a privilege to play for the club for 4 years, and I learned a great deal about how to enjoy the game while I was there.
Fantastic. Well, look, 2001 rolls around and a 16-year-old you earns a move to Sunderland. Did you know of Sunderland's interest, and how did Mick McCarthy treat you when you arrived at the club?
It was actually, when I signed for the club first, it was Peter Reid that was in charge, and there was, I think there was 7, 8, 9 Irish players within the youth system. I had the opportunity to sign for a couple of clubs in England, obviously Sunderland being one of them. I think just the thought of having people that were going through the same thing that I would have been going through with moving away from home at such a young age, the thought of having the Irish lads around me was a big part of me choosing Sunderland to help me through that phase.
That's right. And the guys that you just mentioned, I think Niall Quinn, Jason McAteen, I believe Kevin Kilban.
The three lads in the first team were brilliant. They were brilliant with all the young Irish players. They would take us out for dinner and make sure we were all feeling good and not too homesick on a daily basis.
And what was their advice like? Did they give you guys much guidance?
Yeah, they did. Like I said, whenever they take us out for dinner and stuff, they'd always speak to you, and obviously they'd speak to you around the training ground every day to make sure you were okay and settling in the area. And then football wise they were just they were a great help with just getting you to keep your head down and keep working hard every day.
And I assume you come from a family that are big football fans. Did they enjoy the fact that you were there with three Republic of Ireland internationals?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously I went there when I was 16. I was just involved in the academy, but I think everybody from where I was back home became supporters of the first team in Sunderland as well.
Brilliant. Well, look, the 26th of April 2003 is a date that must stand out in your mind. It was your senior debut for Sunderland, which happened to be against deadly rivals Newcastle United.
Obviously, any young player's dream to make your debut. It wasn't something that I was expecting at the time. It, it came out with a blue, to be honest. I played the second half of a reserve game on the Thursday night, and I was supposed to fly home on the Friday. And I trained with the under-19s on Friday morning, expecting to fly home Friday evening to Ireland for the FAI Awards on the Sunday night. But I was pulled into the reserve team manager's office after training, and he said, "Look, the manager wants to speak to you. You're in the first team squad tomorrow." So I was surprised, and I thought he was taking the mickey out of me, to be honest. So I had to go down to the first team side of the training ground just to make sure he was telling me the truth.
That's a great story. That's a fantastic story. I mean, you faced the likes of Alan Shearer, Craig Bell, I mean, even Shay Given. I mean, that experience alone must have been fantastic for you.
At 18 years of age, and you go on a pitch with 49,000 people there, it's a little bit of a blur, to be honest, at that time. But when I look back on it now, I look back on it with fond memories. And I remember the first ball I got. I thought, oof, nervous one here, but thankfully I dealt with it well on the day.
Give it to someone that's experienced, right?
I know, yeah. I think it was Jody Craddock just fired a ball into the middle of the pitch. I was thinking, thanks, Jody, I appreciate that.
Brilliant. Well, I know a hip injury kept you out a whole season before moves to Scunthorpe, Boston United, and then Belgian side Royal Antwerp followed. I know the manager at the time was Warren Joyce, and I presume Joyce was there was because of the link between Antwerp and United. What did you make of your year in Belgium? What did it do for you on a personal level?
I suppose it just made me appreciate the different type of football played in different parts of the world. It was a different culture, a different way of playing the game. I knew Warren from when I was younger at Sunderland, and Warren was the youth team coach at Leeds United at the time. So we'd come across each other in the past. So when the opportunity came to go to Belgium, it was a no-brainer for me. I wanted to try and go and test myself somewhere else. Obviously, I'd filter down the leagues in English football, and the style of football I like to play, I didn't really fit into the systems in a couple of the clubs that I was at. So it was time for a change, and when the change came along, I was quite happy to learn a different culture of the game and a new experience for me.
Absolutely, and I think Warren is actually in Melbourne at the moment, coaching Melbourne City.
Yeah, I think he's the Melbourne City manager now.
That's right.
So, a bit like myself, he's taking his career elsewhere as well.
Of course, why not?
Exactly.
There you go. Now, you moved back home to play for Sligo Rovers, and then came stints at Dundee United and Shamrock Rovers. Now, I know newly formed Canadian side, the NASL Ottawa Fury, they came calling, and they made you their first ever captain. Good memories of your time there?
Yeah, great memories, Stel. It was a unique situation. Like you said, it was a newly formed club, so I'd never been involved in something like that before, so that was unique in itself. But I think with the club being newly formed, the manager made sure he brought a certain type of personality to the club, and everybody there was very together from day one, because we were all in the same boat. We were all coming from different parts of, whether it be Canada, America, or Europe or South America. We were all being thrown into the same environment, so we got along very well. And in the first season, it was difficult on the playing side of things, because as you can expect, if you have to put 25 players together, it's a tough job for any manager. But thankfully, moving into the second season, the manager knew the bits and pieces that he needed to put together to make us better. He done that, and we had success in the second season there, which was nice.
Were you guys under much pressure there? Because, you know, when they say you move to a club like, for example, Sunderland, the club with a lot of history, great players there in the past, now you're switching to a completely brand new club, it's a clean slate, no history, nothing there in the background. Obviously, it's a franchise, so there's going to be money pumped. But from a successful perspective, was there much pressure there?
Not so much in the first season. I think in the first season, you sort of get away with that pressure. So, like, because it's a first year of a new club, But I think once you move into the second season, people start to realise, well, they're not a new club anymore, so they need to have a little bit more success on the pitch, and the expectations go up. And in Ottawa, maybe in the first season we were getting 3,000 to 4,000, but in the second season we were getting 8,000 to 9,000 fans every week. So obviously with the success we were having on the field, more people were coming out to watch, which then brings more pressure to produce every week.
That's right. Now, in 2015, you were named in the NASL's Best 11, which is basically the equivalent of Team of the Year, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you? Because you'd only been there a couple of seasons, if that.
Yeah, it's a great honour. I think the Team of the Year is picked by the coaches within the league. And as far as I know, your own coach isn't allowed to vote for anybody in his own team, so... To be picked as one of the best players in the league by the opposition coaches is an honour for any player. It means you must be doing something okay if you're causing problems for them when you play them. So
that's right. So you moved down from Ottawa to Jacksonville. Did you only spend 6 months there? Because I know Miami came in and they forked out $750,000 for you, which is now, well, I don't know if it still is a record.
I think it was just an opportunity that came up for Jacksonville. I'd obviously went there, signed a 2-year contract, and was expecting to be there for 2 years. And then when Miami had spoke to Jacksonville, Jacksonville sort of decided that was the best thing for it was the best thing for them as a club. And then I spoke to my family, and we decided it was the best thing for us as a family moving forward as well. So. That was why the period at Jacksonville was so short. I think I played five league games. So it was a really short period, but one that I enjoyed and one that I made some good friends with.
Brilliant. Well, I know Miami are top of the NASL table at the moment, and I know some skeptics claim that the absence of Tampa Bay Rowdies has kind of denigrated the league somewhat. What would you say to that?
Look, if you're going to lose teams like Tampa Bay, it's going to affect the league. We played Tampa in the US Open Cup this year, and we had a good game against them. They're the top side, they're a top club. It's not easy if you lose teams like that in the league. It does have an effect, but then again, we played them in the cup as well, and we beat them. So I'm pretty sure if we played them in the league, we would have beat them as well.
Well, I know David Beckham and Simon Fuller, they're thinking of creating a Miami club. I know there's Miami United as well, and Miami FC, obviously. Do you think this potential MLS franchise will hurt you guys somewhat?
It's a difficult one still. I don't know what the time scale is. Obviously, you hear different rumours going around about David Beckham's franchise coming in 2019, 2020. By the time to have a stadium built, there's nothing really been finalised or anything. It's all rumours here. But hopefully it won't affect our club too much. I think Miami's a big enough area that you can have two professional football teams in the city. But only time will tell. Only time will tell on it.
Absolutely. Well, you guys are top of the table. You're guaranteed the semi-final spot in the playoffs. What would winning the NASL Championship mean to you?
I think it would probably be the biggest achievement of my career. The fact that the club just started last season as well. It was their first season last year. And similar to my time in Canada, we had an up and down first season where we had some good results, some bad, and we weren't very consistent. But this year, the managers went out and brought in a few bits and pieces that he knew were going to make us better, and that's why we're in the position that we're in right now. But in the playoffs over here, it's like two cup finals. You have a semi final and a final in the NASL playoffs. So, and I think everybody knows anything can happen in a cup final. So, we've got to make sure that we're focused and concentrating for the semi final first, and hopefully the final.
The thing is, I'm not I'm not an American soccer connoisseur, so to speak. I know bits and bobs. I know about the USL. I know about MLS. And I know about the quality of the football. And while a lot of people tend to, as I said, poo-poo it and shoot it down and say, oh, you know, it's League One standard, whatever. When you look at the players that have been to that part of the world, like your Kakas, like your Clebersons, like your Maoris, they played at this level and they haven't won the biggest trophy there is to win. Ashley Cole is another player, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, the list goes on. It shows you how competitive these leagues actually are when these players can't stamp their authority on it.
I don't think people realise how competitive they are over here. Like, I think the American players in general are, they're physical, they're strong, they're fitness athletes, they're beasts. And then you come across players that are beasts and they have football ability as well. So it's difficult for people coming over from Europe, because I don't think they don't realise the level that they're coming to. And also you have to take into consideration that the travel over here is something that you never see in Europe as well. So the travel, we played San Francisco away last week. It's a 6-hour flight for us to get there, you know.
Yep.
Some clubs will fly the day before the game. We're lucky enough that we travel a couple of days before the game. But that's the equivalent of maybe flying from the UK to Russia for the game.
Mm.
It's really difficult, the travel side of things. I think the older players that come from the UK maybe feel the effects of that a little bit as well, and maybe that's got a little bit to do with why they don't perform to the standards they've been used to back in Europe every week.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, a couple of quick things before I let you go, mate. Republic of Ireland, they face Denmark in the World Cup playoff draw. Do you fancy your chances?
Getting nervous for it now.
Well, were they the worst possible team to draw against? Because I looked at the possible teams that they could have faced. I was thinking, people are writing off Denmark. They kind of quietly went about their own business. I mean, you know what you're going to get from the other teams. But Denmark could be a tricky one.
It could be a really tricky one. When you look at the likes of Christian Eriksen coming up against you, it could be a really tricky game.
Yep.
Especially Ireland, they're not really renowned for being a team that keeps possession and stuff like that. So I would imagine Denmark will probably have the majority of the possession, which could cause problems for the Irish, especially because of Eriksen. He's going to be the one that we have to try and stop creating.
That's right. And on a final note, the US men's national team, they failed miserably, and I know Klinsmann got a lot of flack in the past for obviously his team selections and tactics and whatnot. Bruce Arena came in. Is it a case of be careful what you wish for now? Because you've seen the golden era kind of on the way now. You know, your Tim Howards, your Clint Dempsey's and whatnot. Does it need to be a shake-up for the national team?
I think so. Obviously, I've been over here for the last four seasons now, so I keep an eye on the American team, the Canadian team and stuff like that. So I think it's a good thing that they haven't made the World Cup, to be honest, though, because I think they do need to shake things up. They do need to bring some younger players into the system. And the fear I had for them was that they would make the World Cup and they would still use the same squad of players in the World Cup next year that pretty much just aren't good enough, and you can see that when they don't qualify from the group that they were in, it's definitely a sign that change needs to be made.
Yeah. See, the thing is, I mean, you know as well as I do, these American soccer teams, they've invested heavily in youth development. And it's not going to be an overnight fix. It's not going to be a quick fix, so to speak. It will take time. And granted, you know, they're going through a rough patch at the moment. Perhaps this is what they need. This is similar to what the Dutch have. They need to shake up their structure, and maybe the people, or should I say the powers that be that make the decisions, need to be swept aside, so to speak, and bring in new faces. Because it just seems that you've got these big clubs, these big franchises investing in their local communities and in youth development and everything, and they're not reaping the benefits yet. But as I said before, it's going to take time. It's not an overnight thing. We saw with the class of '92 at United, with Ajax's system, with La Masia, Barcelona, these things just don't happen overnight. And I just think that, well, I just hope that these clubs have patience and they keep within their structures to develop these players, because it's a huge nation. People don't realize how big the United States is. It's a continent in itself.
it's massive. It's massive, and I think that's the thing. Because it's such a huge nation, it deserves to be at the top of the football world, and that's the hope for everybody over here, is that they can compete at the top. But like you said, I think there's a few things that need to need to change within the structure of the system over here, whether that be down the road bringing in promotion relegation, and obviously the franchises in the MLS, owners invest a lot of money, so I don't know what the solution is going to be. There seems like the leagues are run by different organisations, the MLS, the NASL, USL, they're all different organisations, so something's going to have to give, whether it be all the owners come and sit down together and see if they can battle out a system that's going to work for everybody, that's going to benefit US football moving forward. And then further down the line, you will see the benefits of it, and you will see a lot of younger players coming through and getting opportunities.
Absolutely. Well, Richie, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. Really, really appreciate it. I hope you can come back on at some point. It would be great to have you back on when we talk about our Premier League reviews and that kind of stuff. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'd love to get back on anytime. Anytime you're struggling to get somebody on, so I'll make sure I'm free for you.
Oh, come on, you're never a substitute, mate. Come on now. All-star player here, come on.
I'll make sure I'm free for you.
Great stuff. Cheers, Richie. Well, look, before I let you go, you're on Twitter. I've actually just found you. Would you like to tell our listeners your Twitter address or Twitter handle, sorry?
It's RichieRyan20.
Excellent, wonderful. And Richie is followed by a lot of people that we know, so he's quite a popular chap. So yeah, get following, guys. And speaking of which, you can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We also have a Facebook group page. Get involved, and we'll be back very soon. Take care.